404-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, I don't know how they're able to pick out the right song at the right time. How did they know we were going to talk about Ukraine? But we are. And Sandy, there's a conversation as, you know, people are starving different parts of the world. We may not be aware of it in our country. But the shortage of grain coming from Ukraine and Russia has caused a major stir in different parts of the world, and people are going hungry just as they predicted would happen. And many, I guess, I didn't think that there was any way possible that there would be a decision or brokered decision between Ukraine and Russia. They're battling each other, you know, tooth and nail, that they would be willing to sit down and have this conversation about allowing the grain to move.
Well, I think, you know, there is this problem that the starvation, which much of it would occur in the northern portion of Africa,
right,
and that it has a starvation has an impact on refugees and a destabilizing effect on outward migrations and migrations of people. Turkey frequently finds itself right in the middle of that, because it really is at a crossroads for people to movement of people,
right,
from the place of starvation to someplace else. So Turkey has an extreme interest in avoiding that outcome. Turkey is a fairly influential country. It's Erdogan has kept up his ties. They're part of NATO, but he's also tight with the Soviet Union. I made a mistake there. With Russia. And so he's in a position to have conversations. And I think he has impressed Putin with the fact that there would be a destabilizing effect on Turkey and on portions of the world that Russia does care about as the result of starvation. And so as a result of the conversations, apparently Russia has said that they will allow for the movement of grain in and out of Ukrainian ports. But there's a price for that, and one of the prices for that is that Ukraine would remove the mines that they have placed along their coast and in and around protecting their ports to keep the Russian Navy from being in a position to make a naval assault on Ukraine. And so that's really the sticking point. Ukraine has indicated, I guess, that they're willing to sign on to this. It's going to be signed on by Russia, Ukraine, and the UN. And the UN will be a watch force to, I guess, make sure that the promises are kept. Russia's promise is that they will not launch a naval assault as the result of the removal of these landmines. But I have heard as well spokesmen for Ukraine voicing skepticism, like, in this time of war, how can we trust that,
right,
Russia won't actually use the advantage that's being created by the removal of these landmines? And so we'll see. But it looks like they've been able to reach agreement. The fact that they've reached agreement might open some hope that there could be conversations between the parties. So far, both Russia and Ukraine have agreed that Ukraine has been unwilling to have talks with Russia since April. Russia's been accusing Ukraine of being unwilling to talk, and Ukraine has said, we are unwilling to talk. Russia has said they don't think talks would be very useful at this point, but that seems to be a statement that would suggest that they're willing to talk, and maybe the usefulness.
But the civilian targets that they keep.
What we read is about civilian targets, but civilian targets might be collateral damage, and whether they've been the absolute target, or, you know, when you're in artillery war and you're not using smart weapons, the things that get hit can be collateral to actual targets. The other thing that the Russians would claim is that these civilian targets, for instance, shopping centers, have become used as refuges and hiding places for the military, right?
Right.
So when you're hiding soldiers in a shopping center, is it any longer a civilian target, or is it a military target? And this is what happens in warfare. The people making the attack would argue that that's a place where the military is being hidden. Maybe they're just thinking it might be that they're hidden there. Maybe they know they're hidden there. But so in warfare, you end up with this kind of thing happening frequently. And so you know, has Russia decided to move to civilian targets? It's not exactly easy to tell.
So, Sandy, let's go back to again the conversation about opening up and allowing the grain to move. But at the same time, there's this conversation about the U.S. may send fighter jets. That, to me, could prevent the movement. Why Russia would say, okay, we're going to make a deal and allow the grain to move.
Well, it's interesting. Because 3 months ago, the United States and Biden specifically nixed the notion of sending American-made fighter jets to Poland so that Poland could send MiG fighter jets in its arsenal to Ukraine. And we nixed that because we thought it would be destabilizing escalation of the conflict. Are we really going to do it now, or are we really just talking a destabilizing kind of rhetoric in response to Russia talking about it broadening its objectives in Ukraine? They're talking now about broadening their objective beyond the Donbas region. Russia's at least giving lip service to that through Lavrov and some of the other spokespeople. They're also talking about, or at least taking steps that look like they're going to formally annex portions of Ukraine that they have taken control of through the battlefield. And so these things seem to be escalations in preparation in preemption of settlement talks for, you know, that might occur between the two countries, Ukraine and Russia. Because if Russia takes these things as their own, they would no longer, I suppose, be willing to negotiate over them, and the room for negotiation narrows. I think some of the reason that Russia is making these statements is to say, look, if you don't start negotiating with us, we're just going to take unilateral steps to narrow the issues upon which we would be willing to negotiate. And I think the United States conversation about sending fighter jets might be an effort to try and keep Russia from making those moves in advance of negotiations. My hope is that all of this is really just talk that will lead more efficiently and more directly to negotiations. And my hope is that we will help Zelensky believe that negotiations are the path to take.
You know, Sandy, the fact that that Russia's invasion is expanding, they're basically leveling Ukraine wherever they are. The cost of reconstruction thus far is almost $1 trillion. You know, $750 billion. There's chaos, civilian casualties. It's just not getting any better.
Well, the thing that worries me is that we keep seeing things like MI6, the intelligence agency for Britain. A couple of days ago, the leader of it said that he thought that Russia was running out of steam.
Reading that.
They were using munitions at such a fast rate that, you know, day after tomorrow, sometime, they're going to have to let up. They're going to have to let up on the invasion. That's all talk that suggests that we're fueling Ukraine with the notion that all they have to do is hang on a little bit longer, and Russia will run out of steam and they'll have an improved negotiating position. And meanwhile, Ukraine is suffering very material losses because it's inevitable. And so it worries me that's the kind of talk that's ongoing, because that's the talk that works against negotiation. And the kind of talk about sending planes and the rest of it, that's the kind of talk that actually leads to negotiation. So when I hear Russia talking about expanding its objectives, and when I hear the U.S. speaking in some conversation in Denver about possibly sending jets, to me that's all talk preparatory to trying to bring the other side to the negotiating table. When I hear them talking about Russia running out of steam, that seems to me to be talk that's designed to have Ukraine hang on longer.
You know, they're talking about somewhere around 15,000 Russian troops have been killed. Even though that's a significant number of deaths, it's really a drop in the bucket to the size of their army, right? I mean,
well, yeah, and although, you know, 15,000 deaths in a period of months is difficult to take. That's at the rate of probably 50,000 in a year. And so that's a difficult war to sustain, and that would be a difficult war for the United States to sustain. We had 50,000 deaths in Vietnam.
Yeah, 10 years.
Over a whole bunch of years. So that's a significant loss. But the losses of Ukrainian lives, we've never seen that total brought up, but I'm confident it's at least the same.
You know, it is not just still puzzling because that this is still going on, but the fact that we haven't come close to even reaching the apex of this war yet is...
Well, I don't know quite what that means, but I don't know. I mean, if we start negotiation, it could come to an end. If we don't start negotiations, this could drag on for a very long time.
But Sandy, the negotiations have to come from the nation, I guess, that's been invaded first, right? I mean,
well, both countries have to agree to talk. My sense is that Russian wants to talk, but maybe that's because they want to talk and cement the situation as they see it. They want to have the Donbass, they want to have Mariupol and Crimea cemented as basically in the Russian control, and they want to have neutral Ukraine. I have long thought that was the likely result of the realpolitik, the hegemony of Russia, the socioeconomic political condition, the geopolitics of the region. There's so many inevitabilities associated with that kind of an outcome that causing Ukraine to resist negotiations to achieve that outcome is a little bit like asking the Ukrainians to fight to the last Ukrainian.
All right, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Wow.
To man.